This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is the Hans Shot First Podcast.
I don't know it, I'm telling you.
We'll be talking in-depth about common movie moments
from my dead body.
With the mix of all things pop culture along the way.
Yeah, Oscar.
Okay.
Welcome, everyone, to Hans Shot First. I'm Jeff, joined as usual by Scott and Alex. Say hello.
Hello.
Hey.
This week, we're talking about the Grand Budapest Hotel.
5-star rating.
I do want to stay at a hotel that I have to ride a lift up to. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
An inclinator.
This came out in 2014, directed by Wes Anderson, written by Wes Anderson, Stefan Zweig, and Hugo Guinness. Starring Ralph Fiennes, F. Murray Abraham,
Ralph.
Yeah.
Are you being serious, Jeff?
What am I being serious about? His name is Ralph Fiennes, right?
And he pronounces it Rafe for some reason.
Yeah. I don't know. Who the fuck is this guy?
You don't know Rafe Fiennes?
I guess I've heard the name, but I don't really know.
Okay, off to a great start.
Yeah. Isn't he Voldemort or something? I have no idea.
That's one of his roles.
Among other things, yeah.
We're not supposed to know.
Have you seen Schindler's List? There's Willem Dafoe.
I've actually never seen Schindler's List. He fucking Judy. Pronounces his name Ray.
Rafe.
Even worse. All right. Starring Rafe Fiennes, F. Murray Abraham, Mathieu Amalric, Adrien Brody, Willem Dafoe, Jeff Goldblum, and Harvey Keitel.
Tell you something.
Yeah.
Jude Law, it's a huge cast. Jude Law, Bill Murray, Edward Norton, Jason Schwartzman.
He skipped right over.
I don't know this girl. I have Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse.
Saoirse.
I don't blame you on that one.
I love you, Saoirse.
I don't blame you on that one at all.
Lea Seydoux, Tilda Swinton, Tom Wilkinson, Owen Wilson, Larry Pine, or Lar Pine, and Tony Ravioli. All right.
Did you recognize Tony Ravioli?
Ravioli?
I have no idea.
He's Flash Thompson in the Tom Holland.
Oh,
that's right.
That's probably the
Damn, that's right. It looks so different.
Yeah.
He packed on some pounds for that role of Flash Thompson.
I think he actually
he did
like,
look
was
familiar
a
the whole time. All right. I think that's everybody. Whose movie was this?
This was mine.
Mm-hmm. All right, talk about it, Scoot.
So, thank you, Joff. I'm a Wes Anderson fan, like hugely though. Like
a Wes Craven fan.
Yeah, Wes Craven fan. Yeah, West Haven. Yeah. Mm-hmm. West Haven fan.
Very inside joke.
Yeah, I typically like his stuff, but I don't necessarily get excited about new movies from him coming out. The French Dispatch, his latest one, just really doesn't interest me. And see, maybe it's good. I don't know. That looks It looks incredibly twee, like all of his movies are. But at any rate, I saw this one in the theaters. And it was probably like on the tail end of its run. And mostly just by kind of word of mouth that you know, people I knew had seen it and they liked it. And yeah, I got to see it in the big screen.
All right. Alex, what's your history with this?
Same. I'm not a big Lee fan of Wes Anderson, but I do like his movies when I watch them. But they're so stylized and quirky that I need like a long time before I watch another one. So I tend not to see any of his new movies, even though I know I'll probably like them. So this was the first time I've seen The Grand Budapest Hotel. And yeah, I enjoyed it.
Okay.
On HBO Max. That's where I saw it.
That's where I watched it again, too, I should point out, other viewing.
I had never seen this before. I remember hearing about it when it came. I think it got some Oscar buzz for something. I don't remember. But
is it Moonrise Kingdom? That one also looks familiar, but that's one I didn't watch.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What?
It's like, was it Moonrise Kingdom that it was nominated for? Oscar buzz.
No, this was definitely...
Yeah, no, this got nominated for some things. I'll pull it up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Wait, that one of us was having a stroke right there. I don't like Wes Anderson movies. we'll get into it, I guess. I've only seen two, though. This is my third one I saw. What was the first one? The OR They Scrubs?
Yeah, Rushmore.
Rushmore.
It's pretty much, his second movie that he wrote, directed.
Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah, I never saw that one. And then the one that we did, The Life Aquatic, with Steve Zissou, whatever his name was.
It's Zissou.
So, yeah. Not a big fan, but we'll get into it.
It was nominated for 5 Oscars.
Not bad.
Best Picture, directing, cinematography, editing, and costume design. And it won for costume design.
Did Flash Thompson win for best makeup with that mustache?
Actually, I lied. There was more. Score. Makeup.
And right. Screenplay. Flash Thompson. Best makeup.
Anyway, it got nominated for a lot.
Jesus Christ, we're off to a great start here. Sorry, as usual, we're going to talk about seven items from the movie. Scott, what's your number 7?
Right. So, my number 7, it was hard not to put some of the gags on this list. My first one, actually, I'm going to swap this around. My first one is that Adrian Brody keeps calling him a faggot, and then he goes on to say, like, if you touch my mother at all, like, I'll kill you. And then he responds with Ralph Fiennes' character's, Edmund Gustav, responds with, but I thought I was a faggot. And then Adrian Brody pauses for a second and says, you are, but you're bisexual. That was
good.
Great jokes, great timing. They both sold that one. So that's
great. Number 7. Great fun face punching.
Yeah, and then it gets followed by the left jabs.
I may have misheard it, but didn't at the very end when they're across from each other in the hotel, I'm going to blow you or something like that. Didn't he say that?
Sounds like I'm going to blow your ass or something like that. it was something that was fairly sexually Latin.
You forgot to say away again.
Yeah, away. We'll do the honka chonka.
Let's go blow this guy. All right. Eat my rubber.
That's for Christmas vacation.
All right, Alex, number 7.
My number 7 is the miniature work in this film. So Wes Anderson's movies are always very stylized. He's got a certain look to it. You always, you know, take a couple frames, a couple scenes, and you know, oh, this is a Wes Anderson film. This one takes it to a whole nother level. I guess he took what he learned from The Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is a stop-motion film, and put it in some of that magic into his miniatures, because they all look great. I love the little touches and everything. He didn't try to hide it or make it look realistic. It all fit within the reality of the storytelling in the film.
It's like a secondhand story being told. Yeah, so.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I loved every bit of all the miniature work in this movie.
Agreed. A little higher on my list. My number seven is the Willem Dafoe character. I liked it at first, then it got old, and I thought it was stupid. So, like, at the very beginning when he's, like, in the... Whatever, where Jeff Goldblum's, like, talking about the will and stuff. He's just kind of sitting there with a stupid look on his face. I'm like, ah, it's funny. And then he just kept doing the same stupid stuff. And got old for me. Except for the very end when he... That part was kind of good. But anyway, Willem Dafoe, like...
He's a fantastic skier.
Yeah.
See him barrel down that slope.
Liked / didn't like him in this movie. Or the character, I should say. He was fine. Mm-hmm. Scott, number six.
My number six is... after they get back from the will reading, it's like the next day, and Ed Norton shows up to arrest Gustav, where he finds... And... They surround him. They tell him that she was actually murdered, and he's being accused. And Ray Fiennes says, "And you think I did it?" And there's this pause, and then he just runs. Yeah, he's head for the stairs, and they chase after him. And I feel like that shot could have gone on for like a couple more seconds, and it would have been even funnier. But it's still pretty hilarious that he just takes off like that, and. Like, the camera stays right where it is, and he just runs off into the background. That made me laugh out loud. So.
Yeah. That's my number six as well, Scott. I thought that was hilarious. All right, Alex, number six.
My number six... Oh, I think I got my list mixed up here. Anyways, my number six is that this movie's quirkier than usual, even for Wes Anderson and Wes Anderson standards.
You think so?
I think so. Definitely more than Rushmore, Royal Tenenbaums. It was closer. It's like with each one of his movies, it gets a little bit...
I would say more than Rushmore. I don't know about Tenenbaums.
No, yeah, more definitely more than Rushmore. Yeah, it's just that with each of his subsequent movies, he seems to get quirkier and quirkier. Maybe it was more of the influence, the cartoony influence that he had with Fantastic Mr. Fox and the stop-motion animation. But yeah, it just seemed a little bit... a bit quirkier, a bit more zany than his usual movies. So, to me, anyways.
Okay.
Yeah, there it is.
There it is. My number six, Scott just said it. It was the scene when when Norton comes to arrest him, and he just takes off running. So, all right. Scott, number five.
Five is the Society of the Cross Keys sequence.
Oh, that was cool.
So there are a couple other recognizable people in that sequence, too, that Jeff didn't mention.
Yeah, the president from NBC was in that.
Yep. There was Fisher Stevens of Short Circuit fame.
Oh, yeah, the hacker.
Yeah. The Plague.
That's right. The Plague.
Damn it. Yeah, the president of NBC. Why is his name escaping me? But at any rate, I liked how they all were like M whatever. And they did this big game of telephone. And, you know, get some fun cameos. Eventually, you get Owen Wilson at the end there. He's also a member of the society. But like, there's the Secret Society, and they all have like the awful cologne that they wear. They all take the work very seriously, but they're all still very crass. They all have like these not bellhop boys. What was his title?
Lobby boys.
Lobby boys. Yeah, they're all these lobby boy, like basically slaves. They keep having them take over for random stuff that they shouldn't, like the tasting, the CPR.
Lobby boy.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that whole scene. That was like Alec. I mean, if you talk about quirky, I definitely see it there. Very in twee. But I still enjoyed that particular sequence.
Yeah, I loved it. It was cool.
All right, Alex, number five.
My number five, and it just hit me with this film. You know, Wes Anderson always has this thing where he films a lot of his scenes just flat. Just flat, sometimes, not always symmetrical, but very flat, 90-degree angles for most of the stuff. And I think that appeals to me because I'm also an animation lover. I love cartoons. So in the old-timey cartoons where they had just, you know, flat backgrounds, it really let the motion speak for itself. So I think that's why it's been appealing to me. It just hit me with this movie. So there it is.
I don't understand it. What? It's flat?
Yeah, like the flat shots that Wes Anderson composes with a lot of the scenes.
Okay.
What would I define flat for us?
Yeah.
Like say, well, at the very start, where you just see a person walking, he's going from screen left to screen right, and there's a wall. And there's a thing. It's everything's very flat. I'll try and find some pictures of what I'm describing here. But there's almost no angles to some shots where they're just completely straight ahead, flat, no camera motion, just looking at a scene. But there's also no angles. It's almost like, like a drawing. Like if you had a kid draw, like, oh, draw a couple buildings. And they just drew, like, the facade squares and rectangles on a piece of paper. It kind of looks like that.
Okay.
So if it was a cube, it wouldn't be a cube. You'd just see a square.
Correct.
Okay. My number five is just the hotel itself, the titular hotel. Just liked it. It was a pretty cool set piece. Just how big it is and little elevators here and there, and the seeing it in the different time frames of who's telling the story, all of that stuff. It's pretty cool. So, and then to add to it, the stylized when it's like the, you talked about the little car or whatever you call it, then it takes you up, the little animated parts added to it and everything. Mm-hmm. All cool. So, the hotel itself is my number five. Scott, what's number four?
My number four is the slope chase.
Oh, that's great.
I kind of loved it and hated it at the same time. Like I love the detail and like the technical work being put into that. I don't know, something about it rubbed me the wrong way. I can't quite put my finger on it. Like maybe like you were saying, Alex, it was too cute.
Yeah, with the little miniatures going down the slope.
Yeah, maybe it was just like a few beats too long. It was, again, technically, I was like, wow, this is really cool. But in the middle of that last act there, I don't know. It didn't quite work for me. I think maybe it's because he winds up like cartoonishly upside down in the snow up to his ankles at the end of it. That was like pushing it even for like the, you know, whatever physics they have going on in Wes Anderson world. But I you probably have more to say about us, but it's definitely cool from a technical standpoint.
I agree. I have a little more about to say this later. All right, Alex, number four.
My number four is the chase when Willem Dafoe was chasing after Jeff Goldblum as the lawyer. That whole sequence was amazing. Very surreal. Going through a museum?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Was with the very dark and again, very symmetrical. Like both of them were pretty much always at the center of the frame. And being chased, and being chaser, hunter and prey, I should say, was fantastic. Willem Dafoe takes a second to just takes his little boots off. The armor that's only been lit by spotlights, everything else is dark. Him seeing, that was great. And yeah, another perfect example of a flat shot where Jeff Goldblum sees the door and perfectly in the silhouette, you know, you see the door and outside is his bicycle. He thinks he's reached freedom and then the door just slams on his digits. Whew, that was a bit rough. That's another thing. Oh, wait, that's higher up on my list. Forget I said anything.
You guys going to talk about the cat stuff?
No. That was great.
What was the point? I mean, okay, he threw the cat out the window. That's funny, I guess. And why was it in, like, the coat check room? Like, in the bag? Like, I don't
know. Yeah, that was weird.
What the fuck? I did like how he was carrying it with him at one point. And he just dropped. There was in the trash can.
So I did like in the when he walks in the museum and says 15 minutes left. He walks down the stairs, and then Dafoe walks in, and the thing is like magically flipped.
I like that.
The security guard like barely looks like he ever moves, and somehow he got up to do that right before, like on the minute. Yeah, that was a cute gag.
All right, my number four. I combined because I like the ski chase, at least the far away shot, them going zooming down small, with just the style of the movie, which I think Alex already talked about with the miniatures and all of that. I like the ski lift, not the ski lifts, but whatever you call the sky buckets,
the sky trams,
gondolas.
The
gondolas.
That was cool. Yeah, that's pretty clever, I thought too. Like, get the switch.
Yeah. And then you see him when they come out. You see him, like, get out of it from a distance. You see the little guy is just walking, and there's just some weird stuff there.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that game Limbo, almost. Because they're really far back, and they're just little silhouettes of them running.
Yeah.
That's very flat, too, Alex.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. Yeah, just all those little miniature stuff. I don't know, like, I don't remember that. Does he do any of that stuff in Rushmore? I don't remember that.
No.
But I know, like, some of the sea stuff in Zuzu. There's stuff like that, right? So, yeah. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's my number four. So, Scott, number three.
All right. My number three... is Saoirse Ronan and Zero, Tony Ravioli, as you like to call him, as he likes to be called. their like side plot romance was very standard Wes Anderson stuff, but it was still adorable. But I really liked her in this. She's not in it a lot, but I really liked her in all the scenes she was in. Those initial scenes of them kind of courting, when they're in the movie theater and they just start taking their clothes off, it was all very.
Well, they just got engaged.
Yeah, that's true. The two of them together was very sweet. And then a typical Wes Anderson, like, he has to make the whole thing very maudlin, but I liked. Her especially, but I like two of them together.
Did they ever explain her Mexico birthmark?
Nope. It was just a Wes Anderson thing.
Yep. Just like Gorbachev.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mexico. Because she's a patriot.
I did like how, the only time Zero ever really talked back to whatever his name is, just don't flirt with my girl.
Yeah. Stuff. Don't flirt with her.
To Rafe.
Can't believe he didn't know. It's Ralph Fiennes.
I thought, I've always heard his name. I thought it was Ralph Fiennes. When I read Ralph, he wasn't paying attention. And then, but I never knew it was Rafe. It's the stupidest name I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's kind of dumb. But, hey.
Well, I don't know. What were we saying?
You were bitching about Ralph Fiennes' name.
Yeah.
Yeah, stupid. No, but why did...
So that was my number three.
Okay. Yeah. Alex, number three.
I was not expecting a murder mystery with this movie. I thought it was going to be, oh, just quirky, funny happenings in the hotel and everything. And it turns out to be this whole, like, a little bit of a whodunit. I mean, it's not a real mystery for long, but yeah, there's murder, then there's runaway, there's prison. There's a fair amount of violence. Not a lot, but it's kind of strong.
It's shocking when it happens.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, okay. Like, the fingers chopped off, the fight that we don't see, the Daredevil-style fight from the prison break.
Oh, yeah.
Ended up as a draw, unfortunately. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised with this film. Subverted my expectations.
Yeah, like the little random nudity or sex scenes.
Yeah. That painting that they replaced the boy with apple.
Boy with apple. All right. Well, my number three is... I don't know whether I come down if I like it or don't like it, but the story within the story within the story within the story... there was like four layers, and then, but then it never really pays off. I thought maybe they'd do more with that, right? So first you find out there's a statue of the author... Yeah. And then you find out the author is telling the story. Then you go to the guy in the bathtub telling. And then you go, you know, so you go back and back and back. And then at the end, they just kind of unwind. Like, I thought that'd be more.
So I didn't catch it till this time around. But I think the joke at the beginning, when the random girl puts the hotel key on that statue, that bust, was that he's famous for writing stories about hotels. Like... So people like put keys from the hotels that he's like referencing in his books.
I see.
That's my guess anyway.
It was just weird, yeah. So it goes back, and then you're like, okay, so this movie's going to be about Jude Law is the main character. Like, you know, that nope, we're going to one more level. Oh, let's give it this. Oh, nope. Okay, now it's about Rafe. Got it.
Mm-hmm. And it's all just a girl reading. Her favorite book.
Yeah.
And that's it.
All right. Well, that was my number three. So, Scott, number two.
Okay. My number two is the whole prison break sequence. It was a lot of fun. You don't typically see stuff like that, at least not in the Wes Anderson movies that I have seen.
Yeah.
But just how the giant guy with the scar pays it forward by killing the squealer. Yeah. And Rafe and Gustav says, you sweet, kind man, after he just murders this other guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, them escaping with the ladder and then like the Shawshank stuff. And they eventually get to that room above the guard room. But that was a great shot where it goes down to them and up to them, and the guy just pulls out the knife. And is like, well, and he jumps down, and then with the, like you guys were just talking about, it happens all off screen, pretty much except at the very end of it, and they're all dead. And then he makes the very crass remark about how, oh yeah, I'd call that a draw. And they escape, and in the background they strangle that poor bus driver. Is all like again like kind of shocking in the context of the world.
But the
prison break sequence is my number two.
Yeah, I agree. That's pretty good. I like the tiptoeing over like all the going underneath or tiptoeing across all the guards.
Yeah, that was nice great. Like a nice little dance.
Yeah. All right, Alex, number two.
My number two is. The Lobby Boy, Tommy Ravioli, Tony Revolori. I thought he was great. He did a great job. Was this one of his first movies?
I don't know.
Probably, yeah. I like that little touch that it's like at first it's like, man, that mustache looks really bad. Why would they ever do that in this movie? And it's like, oh, okay. He just draws it on every morning himself. He's got his own quirks.
I think he did grow it at the very end, though.
Yeah. Right? No, yeah. At the very end, he finally was able to grow his own mustache. Yeah. Him and Sorsha, yeah, had really good chemistry. Yeah, I also did enjoy their little side story romance. And yeah, he was loyal. He was there for Mr. Gustav. I like how he kind of stood up for himself, besides him telling Mr. Gustav not to flirt with his fiance. But when he said, why on earth, you know, when they're having it out, actually, after the escape, he's like, what will you think that we want another immigrant over here? It's like, whoa, he told him his whole really sad backstory. And then Gustav is like, well, obviously, I take back everything I said. Really sorry about, you know, all that stuff. Just like, so that was like a really nice.
I think my
bittersweet moment.
My favorite scene was him, with him was when they go to look at the painting, and then he just starts like, all he does is give that look, and we immediately know that he's like basically saying we should steal the painting. This was a great.
He's a good like lobby boy
acting and some filming there, but yeah, just that one look, he conveyed a whole like plot to run out of there with the painting.
A good lobby boy knows his guests once before they even know it. So he knew lobby Gustav boy wanted to take that painting, even though Mr. Gustav wasn't planning on it. So he just got him the little footstool. That was it. That was great.
All right. Well, my number two is him too. I have him and Rafe. Those characters were good in this. I really like the chemistry between the two. I was looking up what his previous credits were, Tony Ravioli, and you know, you mentioned Entourage the other day, and you meant the line you said for drama when they're filming basically Narcos. He was in that episode.
Oh, okay.
He just is a son here, so playing. But a lot of just TV stuff, and it seems like be his first movie, because I see like Kid Number Two. He's also in Shameless.
TV movie, yeah.
Yeah, My Name is Earl.
Well, cool, this is a pretty big get for your first film.
Yeah.
Good role. Good job, Mr. Ravioli.
Yeah. But yeah, both of them I thought were really good. I saw the chemistry between them was really good, like the mustache thing. We always talked about, you know, don't flirt with my girl. Is he flirting with you?
Yes.
And Rafe's gentlemanly, you know, Britishness plus his perviness too. I don't know. There's a bunch of stuff about.
Yeah, I'll want to say about him in a minute. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just all of that I thought was pretty good. So that's my number two. And Scott, number one.
Number one here is Ralph Fiennes. I absolutely love this performance. It's the main reason I wanted to watch this again. Just such a wonderful balance of just like kind of aristocratic, like worldly charm, but then he just is so incredibly crass. He punctuates almost everything he does with just like with swearing or just being pompous, being an asshole. He's just constantly walking that line throughout the entire movie, and it's a lot of fun. Like when they're, I think it's when they're in the confessional, when that guy X tells him that they killed his sister, and he goes, "Fuckers!" Like just the random expletives that fly out of him at points. You know, he really is just this kind of very lowbrow, like Jeff said, like person that's, you know, they kind of encapsulated at the end about how he was, you know, living in a world that never really existed, or at least not by the time he was born. But he maintained the illusion with I forget the line, but yeah, just a great character. Just all the little beats throughout the movie with him that we didn't talk about, like when he's pushing the cart around in the prison, like serving people, how he gives that little speech about how basically you have to jump a guy in the prison the first day, but you know, with a Wes Anderson spin on it. Like the fact that he sleeps with all the octogenarians. I've had older, he says at one point.
Yeah, but why blonde?
Yeah, like how when he goes through that whole speech about how when they're on the train going back with the painting, about how the painting reminded her of him, and now will always remind him of her. And 2 seconds later, he's like, "We should sell it on the black market." Yeah. Help me out with this, and I'll give you 1.5% of the sale.
Make it 10%.
Again, just a great character. I think I could go on, but I think that's mostly it. I think that's all I really want to say. Ray Fiennes is M. Gustav.
He's a Fiennes actor.
All right, Alex, number one.
Also, Mr. Gustav, as played by Ralph Fiennes. Great character. I mean, the whole film kind of hinges on Mr. Gustav and Ralph's performance. And yeah, he pulled it off. He's doing the great work?
Yeoman's?
I wouldn't call it yeoman's work.
It's too.
Isn't that more of an off scene? Too front and center to be yeoman. But yeah, he's doing great. He does, like Scott said, raise that fine line between gentleman, asshole, pervert. It's like all those things that make up the character that is Mr. Gustav. It's fantastic work.
Agreed. My number one's already been mentioned, but the prison chase or the prison escape. I liked it. It's just chiseling away. It's just a quick, stylized version of Shawshank. It was fun. Like I said, I think the best part was when they were tiptoeing and going underneath the guards, sleeping guards. And the one guy trying to squeal on him, as you guys mentioned, and him getting killed by the big scar dude. And then, them popping up and having the argument while the other guys are hijacking the bus. And good stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Any honorable mentions?
The joke in the beginning when he talks about all the women that M. Gustav sleeps with, where he's like they're old, lonely, rich, blonde, something something, and he goes, "Why blonde?"
Yeah,
like those other things weren't interesting at all, but the blonde thing was.
He's like, "Well, because they were."
Yeah.
I know what a tontine is. When Jeff Goldblum mentioned tontine, yes. He's like, thank you, Simpsons. I know what that is.
I owe Archer for that because I was too young to know what they were talking about. The Hellfish episode.
Was that when they ride in snow planets to get you around?
That's great. What? You really didn't get that in The Simpsons, Scott? I mean,
I think I understood. I understood the plot, but like, I never like was like the word tontine didn't stick with me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because they had Ox like explain exactly what it.
Yeah, yeah. No. Like, but like, it was at the time I wasn't thinking about it. It was until Archer did the same. Well, did a similar thing that I.
Right.
And tontines are wildly illegal, by the way, at least in America.
Yeah. I wonder why.
Yeah.
And I love the food inspection in the prison, when they had the guards like they rolled up a piece of cheese, so he stabs it to make sure there's no tools in there. He cut up a sausage and everything. He opens up the beautiful box from Mendel's. He's like, oh, he just doesn't have the heart to inspect that food because it's so beautiful, so he just passes it on till the next day. That was a great little moment.
I think he was using like a different like knife for every single thing, too. I just go back and watch.
Oh,
that
really?
Scene. Yeah.
Mm. All right, you ready to rate it?
I sure am.
All right, as usual, we rate on a scale of 1 to 7, 1 being garbage, 7 being perfection. Scott,
what
do you give this movie?
Give it a 5. I think I enjoyed it more the first time I watched it. The second time around, I knew all the, like, kind of violence and other things like that were coming, and just, like, the shock value of again, what was coming out of Ralph Fiennes' mouth, so I was kind of ready for it, and that took a little bit of the punch out of watching the movie, but it still moves along pretty well. It's just barely over an hour and a half. I liked it. I didn't mention the sets, but I did enjoy those as well. There's some good craftsmanship here. So, 5.
All right. Alex?
I'm also going to get this a 5. I think I might like it better on subsequent viewings. Maybe I'll catch a little bit more details here and there. But for right now, it's a strong 5.
All right. Well, I was going to give it a 5 until I found out the lead actor's name is pronounced Rafe. And now it's a 3. No, I'm just kidding. I'll give it a 5. I liked it. I didn't love it. I probably won't ever see it again. But I can't say that I didn't like it. I enjoyed it. So, 5 for me.
There you go. Now I know what to get you for your birthday.
Yeah, a Rafe Fiennes action figure.
It's performance. Like, Ralph, you listened to K-Rock back in the day. I mean, Ralph would lay into him every year on Ralph Fiennes' birthday.
Would he?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
He's like, and Ralph Fiennes. What did you too good for us? Us Ralphs? I want to pronounce your name right.
Oh, that's true, because he does have a thing with weird spellings or weird pronunciations of names. So, and if it was his own name, I can see him going crazy.
Yeah, that was great. Something to look forward to every year.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
All right, well now it's time for our crossover topic, which is what, Scott?
Our top hotels.
All right.
So I'll get the ball rolling here. My number 5 is from That Thing You Do. I couldn't remember if they say the name of the hotel in the movie. But I think it's supposed to be the Ambassador Hotel, at least in real life. The room, I think you barely see any of the rooms, but there's like the cafe in front and... Most of it is down to the bellhop / valet out front.
Okay. Now I remember what you're talking about.
Yeah, I can't remember the actor's name, but the guy that plays Lamar is great. But yeah, just that whole sequence, and the whole final act is basically based around them coming in at that hotel. So yeah, that's my number 5.
You know, speaking of that movie, you know, they filmed a lot of that right over here in Orange County, right by my house. Watson's is closed down. They got rid of it.
Oh, how long ago was that?
Less than a year. Okay. And they made it to some, like, I don't know, the locals are upset.
Some place, like who cares, kind of.
It's like a Mexican Hooters is from what I was told. Mexican Hooters. But I don't know. I've heard it's terrible. We haven't been. I also say people, the locals are upset, but then they should have gone. They went out of business for a reason. So, but it just, like, they all have memorabilia there and everything. All right, Alex, number 5.
Well, this time it's me who has the wonky list because I just picked movies that were set in a hotel for most of it.
I mean, that kind of works.
I know, but I didn't get the names of all the hotels. And whatnot.
You're still way on target, worked on target than Scott is for a lot of his
events. I'm just saying.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Anywho.
Oh, I thought we were talking about our favorite trash compactors.
Dead on. Every time.
This is actually a video game. And the video game, they don't have the name of the hotel. I don't know what it is. But they don't even say it's a hotel, but I'm going to choose that it is because I love this arcade classic so much. And that would be Elevator Action. You guys remember elevator action from the arcade?
Yeah. There was some elevator and some action, yeah.
Oh, hell yeah, there were. That game was so cool. Yep, you're just this little super spy, and you have to go in this building, which I'm going to call a hotel from now on. And you have to go to different rooms, or try and guess which rooms have the secret codes to get to the next level, but I never could, and there's spies everywhere coming out of the doors trying to shoot you. It's great. Look it up.
That was fun. I remember that, yeah. So my list is all hotels, but some of them are real, and some of them are fictional, but they're in the movies themselves, and...
Yeah.
Mine is... I had to look it up. It's the Park Hyatt Tokyo Hotel from Lost in Translation.
Okay.
It's the hotel, I mean, for the most of that movie, there are two people stuck in the hotel. And it was really cool. I mean, it's a swanky... But I would... Swanky Japanese hotel, but very Americanized, from what I could tell. I mean, it's also a Hyatt, so I'm assuming there's a lot of influence there, but... anyway, just cool. There's scenes from when they're having dinner or people doing karaoke, or later on you see scenes of like Bill Murray just on a treadmill or elliptical, or him in a big pool, and just pretty cool. Cool the way it was filmed, like cool blue, I think, for most of it.
The fire alarm.
I don't remember that. What happened?
It's after they've been fighting is. Like a scene where the fire alarm goes off and they all go outside.
That's right.
That's kind of where they make up.
Yeah.
I don't really remember him leaving much. At the very end, when he whispers in her ear, and then I guess the karaoke night or whatever.
Yeah, karaoke.
We go out on the town.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, the Park Hyatt from Lost in Translation. Scott, number four.
My number four is the Bellagio. From Ocean's 11. So
also my number four.
So
yeah, nice.
Inside is like, okay, it looks like a casino. There's not much to be like, okay, that is the Bellagio. Although it is cool to see like the, I'm sure, utterly fake like command center. and then the whole vault thing is cool, but them standing outside at the end to watch the water show with Claire de Lune playing is great. And magically, no foot traffic behind them. But I'll save anything else for that Jeff might want to bring up.
Okay, yeah, I don't have much more to add. But all right, Alex, number four.
My number four is from a little-known horror movie called "Tales from the Crypt Keeper: Demon Knight," and that movie is set in an old church that was converted into a hotel. And so all the people are stuck in there with one demon trying to get the key of Jesus. And it's a weird key, but it has some of Christ's blood in it. And it's a movie.
Is that Demon Knight, like N-I-G-H-T or K-N?
K-N-I-G-H-T, yeah. Because the holders of the key are called Demon Knights.
Yeah.
They fight against them.
You know the last place they'd want to sleep is?
Church?
A big old, like, old Catholic, Gothic church. Scared the shit out of me, man. I mean, I guess if you need it, you need it, but...
Ugh. Sanctuary.
Sanctuary.
Alright, my number four, same as Scott's, the Bellagio from Ocean's 11. It's just that the fact that it's so much takes place in there, whether you're under it, you're in one of the rooms, you're on the casino floor, behind the scenes, headquarters, like, I love the scenes with, like, Terry Benedict just, like, canvassing the whole place, right? He's not stopping. He's going from the tables to backstage, looking at the screens, to this and that, all that. Just really cool. Big character of the movie.
It does, and it makes Vegas seem cool.
Mm-hmm. Vegas. Yeah, I've still never even been in the Bellagio, I don't think.
I don't know.
I know we...
I've been
last
adjacent
time, Laura and I,
work, but yeah.
Laura and I went. I wanted to see the water show. We just got it was like bad timing. Like we missed one. And like, oh, now we have to wait another hour and a half. I'm like, oh, I don't want to see it that much. So let's get out of here. All right, Scott, number three.
Okay, number three is from another little known horror movie, The Bates Motel.
It's a motel.
I know. I was going to ask.
No, oh, dead well, on. I mean, obviously dead it's on. Not that far. Yeah. It's a motel. It's out of the way hotel somewhere in the middle of nowhere, Arizona, and yeah, it's
yeah.
Well maintained.
Yeah, stuff happens.
Mother and her son.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Family business.
Yeah, family business. To support those mom and pop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did leave it off my list because it was a motel, just as tiebreakers. But have you guys been to the one at Universal Studios?
Yeah, on the tram ride.
Yeah, but have you ever got? So we went for Halloween Horror Nights or whatever it's called there, and the tram takes you where they let you off at the actual motel part, and you get to like walk on like on the deck of the motel in front of all the rooms, and then for a photo op you can go up and on the you go to the steps of Mother's house and have a picture with an actor dressed up as Norman Bates.
Okay,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so that's cool.
Yeah, but yeah, normally the tour ride, right, you just drive right by it, but this one it actually dropped you off there and you got to walk around for a little bit. So it was pretty fun.
Hmm.
All right. What was that? That was Scott's number three. So my number three would be the Turtle Bay Hotel from Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
That's a good one.
And nice.
He's staying in the Kapua suite.
Yeah. Well, until Dakota Fanning and her people need it.
Yes, that's right. yeah, just, I mean, it's the backdrop for pretty good comedy that we've, I think we've done. We've done this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, nice beach resort and all the stuff going on there. And Jim getting drunk at the bar.
Oh, I'm Samantha.
I'm Samantha. I'll have sex with anyone. All right. What? We're on number twos now?
No, Alex number
two. No, we skipped out. Yeah, we skipped Alex. Okay.
Jim Henson's, I believe, his last film that he got to work on, and The Witches, the 1990 film from Roald Dahl, all set in a hotel because it was a witch convention. Man, I forgot how creepy that movie is. I saw it a couple years ago. I should watch it again with the boys, since they had to read the book at school. Hmm. But yeah, pretty good movie. Angelica Houston. Spook show.
Yeah, there's some disturbing things about that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to look. So you said it was his last show, because I thought we did something recently where I watched something and it wasn't that, but I can't really. Yeah. He's still getting credit with some shit on here, so I don't know.
Maybe it was the movie that came out right after his passing. Because, yeah, I think he passed away in 1990, and that's when this movie came out.
He worked on that dinosaur show, remember that?
Did he?
Like that sitcom? At least that's what I'm seeing here.
They started it without the laugh track, and then the network put the laugh track back in.
maybe not. Maybe this show is maybe inspired by Jim Henson. I don't know. All right, so now we're finished with number three. So now, Scott, number two.
My number two is, you already mentioned it, Jeff, the Park Hyatt from...
Oh, okay. Wow.
Lost in Translation.
Nice. All right. Well, now it's Alex, number two.
Psycho, the Bates Motel.
Okay. Now it's my number two.
Yeah.
The Hollywood Hotel Tower of Terror, the ride.
Okay.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah. The Twilight Zone thing, and unfortunately no longer at Disneyland, but it still exists in Disney World, so lucky for you East Coasters.
I think it might be at Tokyo Disney.
Oh, maybe. That'd be cool, too. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, I love the Guardians of the Galaxy ride, but I still think I like the Twilight Zone, the Tower of Terror better. But, yeah. If you've never been, don't come to Disneyland. Go to Disney World or Tokyo.
Yeah.
or go to Japan.
Or go to Japan.
Yeah, just go to Japan.
God, their parks are so much better over there. I know. Did you know it's like Disney doesn't even own those parks over there? They own them and they just license Disney properties for them. It's a really weird thing. And so they put so much more money into it than Disney. It's weird. But.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, dragons are burning up, bursting into flames over at Disneyland.
We've got to get into Neom News for that, but that's terrifying. And awesome.
It's super fucking metal. Yeah.
All right, number one, Scott.
I this is from something that I don't think very many people have seen, so they might not know what I'm talking about. But the Overlook Hotel.
Yeah. Also number one.
Also number one.
I figured. Yeah. All number ones.
If you're into naked ladies that turn into old ladies,
hey,
they got you covered.
Companion piece,
Grand Budapest.
With the way Kubrick fills it, making it to character itself, just everything about it is awesome. Bloody elevators. That should be like a joke from a movie. Where's the bloody elevator? And it opens up. All right, any honorable mentions? Well, I had the Bates Motel, which you guys already did, and then I had the hotel from Four Rooms. I really don't remember the hotel, but I know it wasn't a hotel, and there was a lobby boy or bellhop.
Yeah, lobby boy. I don't remember that movie. I should watch it again.
Put it on your list.
Okay.
All right, well, I guess it's time for Alex Knows Sports.
I'm Alex, and I like sports.
Sports ball.
So I guess you're not allowed to put sticky stuff on your hands and glove when you're pitching in Major League Baseball. As Mets ace pitcher Max Scherzer is suspended for 10 games by the MLB for having too much rosin. Now, you're allowed to have rosin. You're allowed to use rosin. Can't have too much of it, or else you get suspended for 10 games.
The whole thing was weird.
Which is weird, because, it's like, how much is too much rosin? Then they said the umpires were saying that, his whole hand was, like, black and covered with it. Then they made him wash his hands with alcohol. Apparently, that makes it even stickier.
Potentially. The whole thing was bizarre.
It's the umpire's fault.
The other thing, too, for that one. The weird thing about that as well was... He didn't use the rosin bags that were on the mound.
Oh, that's right. He had it in his pocket.
From the dugout or whatever, but because I don't think you're allowed to keep it in your pocket. The whole thing was weird. The whole thing was weird.
Yeah. They do that in hockey, Jeff, if they use rosin on the gloves to have the stick grip a little bit better. Isn't that illegal?
No, there's nothing illegal about stick. But, I mean, players tape up their sticks for different stickiness and stuff. So that's a thing. And they actually, you know what? It's not a big deal anymore because now the composite sticks, you can actually get them with a sticky texture, like put all the way on there. But back in the day, they would have, which kind of you'd see on the on-deck circle for batters, would be like this big, I think it's called a Moda stick, which is like a big stick with like sticky substance on it, and you just rub it on the part of the bat that you want to be sticky. Some players do that to hockey sticks, too. But that's not that big of a thing anymore. But as far as I know, there's no amount of sticky, too much, too little, that you can't do to your stick. And goalie equipment, I don't know. They're the ones who cheat. I can just see them like putting it all into the puck, hits them, and just sticks to them as opposed to bouncing off. But
it's in their glove.
You just pull out a little like pouch of like bear pepper, not bear pepper, but like powdered form of like,
excuse me, bear pepper.
Like, what I'm getting at is the powder he pulls out in Bloodsport. Like, I don't know what to call that.
Oh yeah, the little aspirin that he crushes.
Yeah,
in his,
like
I think it was just aspirin.
Like hockey player, like a goalie would like throw that into somebody's through the grills in their the cage in their helmets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, well, kind of funny is that goalies or skaters will sometimes they have the opportunity will just skate really fast and stop and just spray the goalie's face through the cage and get the ice all in their eyes and everything. That's a thing that definitely happens.
That's usually a good way to get like punched in the back of the head, though, right?
Oh yeah, as soon as you do it, you're getting punched by it.
Yeah,
but it definitely does happen. It's time for Niamh News.
Yeah.
It was yeah. Okay, not much this week. There's a new White Man Can't Jump movie.
Do they screw with that one?
I don't know. I have not looked up the cast on this, so I don't know if Rosie Perez is in it.
Oh, I'm not in it.
That was worth bringing up. Other comedies. Broken Lizard has said they want to do Super Troopers 3, make it an actual trilogy. I think we all love the first one. Mm-hmm. Second one is funny.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's funny enough that I wouldn't mind the third one. I don't know, Jeff, if you've seen the second one.
I've never seen the second one, and I like Super Troopers, but I still like Club Dread and Beer Fest more.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'd rather see sequels to those movies.
Yeah.
It's that, and the last thing I wanted to mention was apparently Harrison Ford's come out and said he's done with Indiana Jones. Like, this is it. This is where he draws the line.
Nope.
Surprising nobody. I was watching Clear and Present Danger, like, on the background after the Angels lost, so I just kept the TV on. And, oh my God, he's so stiff here. And I'm thinking about, like, this movie's like 30 years old now. How's it like? I don't know how this new indie movie is gonna look. Like, it's gonna be rough.
Not good.
It's gonna be like Robert De Niro, like in The Irishman. Like, that's what I'm expecting.
For a leading man in action movies, Harrison Ford was not really the most nimble and agile in his movies.
But he just looks like he can barely move. Like, he always has this, like, and it was the same thing in Fugitive, where he has this weird kind of like hunched, like, yeah, like, I don't know, he's got bad sticks.
Yeah, like, watch him run in Indiana, like Raiders of the Lost Ark. He runs like chest out and arms.
Okay,
he's always been, but remember, his career started in his mid-30s, right? That's another thing. Like, he did not start as in his 20s like most leading men, right? Han Solo, mm-hmm. I think he's like 34, something like that. So,
yeah. It's not too late to become a superstar A-list actor, people. Go to Hollywood, try out. Go to auditions.
Yeah. Go build carpentry for George Lucas. And
be a carpenter and get really fucking lucky.
All right. I am not looking forward to that movie at all, by the way.
Same.
But yeah, that is it for me. Alex, anything you want to go over?
Yes. Smokey and the Bandit. It's a great little movie. Still. Holds up. I just watched it. Actually, it surprised me. I remember it being a little bit worse, like language and TNA-wise, but it's pretty tame. So I watched it with my kids, and they're like, at the beginning, they're like, I don't like this movie, Dad. Then by the end of it, it's like, oh, my favorite part was when all the cards are crashing.
It's not the bloopers?
No, you see, it wasn't the blooper. There were no bloopers on the first one. I think that's the second one.
Whatever they show at the end of Anchorman.
Right. And Super Troopers. No, Anchorman. But both of them are on Netflix right now, so I've never seen Smokey and the Bandit 2, so I'll probably give that a watch.
Yeah, see, part of me really wishes you'd put these movies on your list and not what you normally have on your list.
Well, I just remembered about Smokey and the Bandit. I completely forgot about that movie until I saw it on Netflix. You know, they cycle movies.
Anything else, Alex?
Nope, that's it. All
right, Jeff?
Not really much. I started watching that show Beef on Netflix.
This looks like too uncomfortable for me to watch that.
Yeah, Scott, you wouldn't like it because I stopped watching after the second. We watched it with Laura, and then after two episodes, I'm like, I'm out. Everyone's miserable in this movie.
Yeah,
this is
there's some weird gun sex.
Yes, there's that. So I mean, the acting seemed good. I liked Stephen Young and Ali Wong.
Yeah, like the pieces it's all stuff that I would want to watch, but just people making self-destructive choices over and over again is.
You would not like it, I don't think. And I, like I said, I gave it two or three episodes, and I'm like, yeah, you can finish this without me. Everyone's just miserable. I don't need to feel that right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it. Right now I'm watching.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Fantasmic.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Maleficent.
Oh. Yeah, sorry. Fantasmic, the dragon caught on fire during the latest Fantasmic show, and it burnt to a crisp pretty badly.
Mm-hmm. Surprise, this has never happened before.
It has.
Has it?
Actually, yeah, it's happened once before, a long time ago, I think, when the show was first starting.
I wonder, I'm curious about, what went wrong exactly.
They're just old.
Because don't they have, pulling ropes and stuff back there?
I don't
maybe pushing rope.
I think they're pushing ropes. Yeah, damn it. Yeah, you beat me by a split second.
I don't think so. I think it's all robotic now for safety reasons. But
yeah, I hope so now.
I watched a YouTube video on it, and it has a nickname. So you know how, Bruce for Jaws? It's got a name.
Sparky?
What's the adage? You know, whatever could go wrong does go wrong.
Oh, Murphy's Law.
Murphy.
So it's Murphy. Oh, geez. Murphy's the name. Because it's happened. It's had tons of issues. And there's actually, I guess, when it's just slightly malfunctioning, not completely burning to a crisp, and they know that, he won't even come out during Fantasmic, and they just have a big water projection of the Maleficent Dragon.
I've
been around for one of those shows.
Yeah, I want to say that I remember that,
So it's not the first. I mean, it's the first time I think it's burnt completely like that. Or maybe Alex said way back in the day it did. But it malfunctions a lot. And so they just have a contingency plan. So I'm guessing for the next little while, maybe not right away. We'll probably have to close the show for a little bit. But once it's back open, you'll just get the water version.
In a couple weeks, I might be doing a thing where I'll get to watch Fantasmic from the art gallery upstairs above Pirates.
Oh, nice.
So, completely unobstructed. So, we'll see how that goes. I'll have to report back on that.
Nice. Mm-hmm. We got a thing where we reserved dinner at, not the French Market, the Riverbell Terrace, I think. And then you have a nice dinner and show there. And there's still a slight obstruction, and you're not dead center, so I think where you'll be will be even better. But it was nice just to sit at your table and have your food and watch a show.
Yeah, that's cool. Anything else, Jeff?
I don't think so. There is something, but I can't remember it. We'll save it for next time. I know we have Guardians coming out here soon, and I'm not too interested in it, but we'll see. Do we talk about the Marvels trailer dropping?
I don't know.
Yeah, no. It looked fine.
Did they have a new one? I always get confused with the teasers and whatever, but...
Yeah, it might be a teaser.
Because they're all full trailers. Yeah,
so I haven't... So Ms. Marvel is the one thing that I haven't... Well, I haven't seen the latest Ant-Man either. But besides that and finishing up Ms. Marvel, I need to catch up on that. But she's adorable, though. I forget the actress's name. Plays her.
Is Brie Larson... gone from, because she's in this trailer, but then I heard something like that she's being replaced with
Khaleesi,
what's her face from Game of Thrones.
I keep seeing clickbait that I haven't gotten into.
They're all from
sites that I'm like, this looks like until I see something a little more mainstream, I'm not gonna click on them. But maybe she wants out. I don't know. Or maybe they're going in another direction. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe they use whatever happens in Flashpoint Paradox to reset the MCU.
That's right.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, I think that's it.
Yeah, I think we're good.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. We at Hans Shot First would like to thank you for listening and supporting the podcast. We would love to hear from you, so feel free to contact us on Facebook and Twitter at Hans Shot First. Also, please leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews are greatly appreciated and help us get more exposure. Once again, thanks for listening and supporting the podcast.